Good evening and welcome to another episode of Broad Street Hockey Radio. I am Kelly. I'm going to be hosting tonight, and I am joined by Kurt R. from Broad Street Hockey, obviously, and also
yes.
Charlie O'Connor. Hi.
Hey, everybody.
Charlie's also joining us, our resident draft expert at this point, which is great because we are going to be focused on the draft tonight. Picks, so a lot of exciting things to talk about. First, I think we will go right into the rumors that came out today about Russian defensive prospect Ivan Provorov. Apparently, he is high on the Flyers' radar, and he is someone that we could end up taking at number 7. Kurt, you want to dive right in, start talking about that?
Sure, yeah. So, I mean, yeah, like Kelly said, Frank Saravalli, who hilariously enough, wrote this post 2 weeks ago for the Philadelphia Daily News before he quit and got him much-deserved promotion to TSN, so congrats to him. But yeah, he apparently has known for a couple weeks now that the Flyers have had Ivan Provorov at the top of their list beyond the obvious 1-2 of Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel. And he does not mince words in this piece. He says that scouts seem very, very confident that if Provorov is there at 7, that then he will be a Philadelphia Flyer. And a lot of people I know would be really happy about that. We would all be happy about that. He was the guy that we took in our mock draft with the SB Nation NHL Network. And it's not hard to believe. I mean, the piece mentions connections that Hextall has to the Brandon Wheat Kings, which is, of course, Provorov's team. One of the best prospects in this draft would probably be a top 5 in almost any other year. I think it's believable, too. Maybe we wouldn't quite expect them to say he was the 3rd prospect on their board, but it's believable that they like him quite a bit. Charlie, I think you would agree?
Yeah, definitely. It's a well-researched piece. It does seem like, number one, Saravalli seems to be a guy who, has good sources. So that's one positive in the, in the rumor's favor. And number two, there's a lot of details in there that seem like they're backed up by facts. As you mentioned, close with the Wheat Kings is Ron Hextall. You also mentioned that amateur scout Mark Gregg, briefly a former Flyer, spent a lot more time in the minors with the Flyers. He's their Western Hockey League scout, and he apparently loves Provorov, which it makes sense. Last year they did trust him with regards to Sanheim. So seems like Sanheim, at least at this stage, is looking like he's going to pan out, at least to be an NHLer. So it would make sense that Gregg has a little bit more clout in the room than he might otherwise, considering the success of last year's first round pick. So it makes a lot of sense. Now, there's always the possibility that it could be something of a smokescreen. I don't think that Saravalli, made up the rumor by any means, but it's possible that the Flyers could have, leaked this to him with the goal of trying to convince other teams that they're not interested in their true target, who could be, any number of, 6-7 other players. It's possible that that's it. I mean, defense isn't a, huge need in the pipeline, definitely a huge need at the NHL level, so it could be a smokescreen, but I lean towards it being true. I think if Provorov's there, I think the Flyers, I think they'll go for him. I think he's just too big of a talent for them to pass up if he's available.
All right. Speaking of organizational need, Charlie, do you think it's important that the Flyers get someone who can contribute at the NHL level, practically right away, maybe in the 17-18 season? Or should the team be looking with more of a long-term eye?
I think that's one of the things that they say is good about Provorov is that, he's relatively close. I don't think that's necessarily something the Flyers have to use as, as a determining factor to pick a guy. If they think a guy has huge upside, but it's going to take 3 to 4 years, but he has, the highest upside in the draft and they're really high on his likelihood to meet that upside, then they should take him. But one thing I will say is that, generally speaking, the sooner a player hits the NHL level, the more talented they are. So, you know, I don't think they should take a guy because he's, you know, physically ready to make the NHL right now. But I do think that if they pick the most talented player on the board, most likely he's going to be relatively close to the NHL just because he's the most talented player on the board. So, you know, I don't necessarily want them taking, you know, say like a Lawson Crouse because he could play on the fourth line next year and he's strong enough to do it, but may top out as a second line winger. I don't like that thinking, but I mean, a guy like Provorov, you know, if they were to take him, I wouldn't necessarily want him up next year. He might be able to play the following year, and I don't think that's taking a guy because you need help now. I think that's just taking the best player available.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. Kurt, any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's all true. Like you said, one thing that we do that may sometimes get overlooked when looking at NHL readiness is guys who are NHL ready, or quote-unquote, generally are better. Well, actually, that's not quite true, but guys who are closer to making an impact at the NHL level sooner are generally better prospects. But I do think that I do want to say, just take the guy who you think has the best chance to be like a really good player over the next however many years. But I do think that, you know, the Flyers, like Claude Drew is 27 years old. Jake Voracek is 26. You don't want to take a guy, you don't disqualify him, but it would be nice to get a guy who you can see still making like an impact, like who you can see making an impact while guys like Drew and Voracek are still like at the peak of their careers, which they are right now. It's not like it shouldn't be a deciding factor, but I don't think it's something that should be totally overlooked. Now, that said, any of the guys who they take at 7, I think most of them look like pretty safe bets to make an NHL impact pretty soon. So who knows? Maybe it isn't a big concern, but I don't know.
Okay. Charlie, you wrote a piece today about the possibility of the Flyers taking a center with the 7th pick. Other than Provorov, who would you say that you like more than most of the other guys that would still be available, and who is someone that you would not like to see the Flyers take at 7?
I mean, I guess other than Provorov, you know, the guy I'm next highest on, about the same amount, to be honest, as Provorov, is I really like Matthew Barzal. Unfortunately, I don't think the Flyers like him very much unless they're, you know, really, really holding their cards close because, you know, as we talked about before, I think last week, they didn't interview Barzal at the Combine, which was kind of weird, just because he's obviously a player that's in that, you know, 6 to 14 range where the Flyers are picking. And that's odd. So I really like Barzal, but I don't think they're going to take him. Obviously, you know, very high on Provorov. And then aside from those two, you know, I kind of view a lot of them, you know, fairly similar in terms of where you rank them. You know, there's, you know, I have a ranking, I guess I would say, but, you know, I any of the other guys who are in that, you know, 6 to 13 range, I wouldn't necessarily be crushed if they take. As long as they're not going way off the board, I'll be, you know, relatively happy. I mean, I guess I would prefer them not to take a guy like Lawson Crouse, but even him, you know, I can see where, you know, his positives are. You know, he's young for his draft year. He's, you know, he adds a size-speed combination that's tough to find unless you're picking at the very high, you know, portion of the first round. So, you know, those two guys are the top guys on my board. And, you know, as for, you know, guys I don't like, I guess everybody has their strengths and weaknesses. So Krause probably not, but, you know, I wouldn't be crushed if he goes either. So,
well, it's important to note that you cannot teach size, so... Krause has that
it's
going
true.
For him. Kurt,
size and speed. Everyone loves size and speed. yeah, no, I mean, sort of like Charlie said, all the guys after Provorov and Barzal, who the Flyers are probably not going to take. Timo Meier is another guy who the Flyers is sort of projected in that range there with all those other guys who the Flyers didn't interview, so we can probably rule him out. I don't think he was ever going at 7 anyways. So amongst the 6 or 7 guys who were realistically in consideration there, we are just sort of plucking at hairs here. What kind of expression was that? I don't know. If we're picking guys we like, I like a little bit more than everyone else, Travis Konecny, so he's one. He went 14th on our community board, so we've been having our readers vote for guys that just vote for the number three spot, number four spot, one guy every day for the last couple weeks. Konecny went 14, and he is a guy that I like a little bit more than that. He had a sort of interesting year. He was a former OHL number one overall pick, got out to a rough start, then picked it up more as the year progressed. So, I mean, he's a guy who I sort of think is like maybe a quarter step behind Barzal in almost like every category. A lot of categories. So I would prefer Barzal over him. But if the Flyers aren't, looking to take Barzal, but still want that kind of skill set, he is one I could see them taking. One that I like maybe a little bit less, and again, I do like pretty much all these guys, but one guy who I maybe like less than the average Flyers fan or the average draft expert, which is a silly thing for me to say because I am not a draft expert. But one guy maybe a little bit less is Mikko Rantanen. The Finnish prospect, generally regarded as the top European prospect out there. Got a lot of puck skill, a lot of people like the fact that he's been playing against men for 3 years in the Finnish league. With that said, a lot of the questions that have followed guys like Lawson Kraus, in some instances Pavel Zacha, regarding their production, I do think that applies to Rantanen in a sense. So if you sort of compare what he did in the Finnish league this past year, scoring a half a point per game at age 18, that's like roughly on par with what, say, Kraus has done. And he's been picked apart for how little he scored this year. And he's a full year younger than Rantanen. And so, and while the fact that he has been playing in a men's league for years counts for something, I think that you would hope to see a little bit more out of him than maybe you have. And he's not a great skater. He's a decent skater, but he isn't a high-end one compared to a lot of the guys who will be on the board there. So, again, I like all of these guys. I like Rantanen. He's just a guy I see mocked to the Flyers at 7, and I would often. And I would maybe like him more a little bit farther down the board. He was 8 on our community board, so people would be reasonably happy to see him taken. But I don't know. There are some other guys who I like more.
Okay.
Yeah. Just kind of to jump in, I think I lost my train of thought. I was going to mention a guy who I do like a little bit more than, I guess, the overall consensus. Kurt mentioned Travis Konecny. One guy who I do like a little bit more is Kyle Connor, the center out of the USHL. I think the reason why I'm higher on him is just because, I think he's a guy who maybe a little bit undervalued due to the league he played in. He's a guy who has great speed. He's got great size. The only thing is he hasn't quite grown into his body the way guys like Rantanen and Zacha and Kraus have. But he's got the frame to be, a real great size-speed combo. And unlike those three guys, he's delivered really strong production so far. And, he's the kind of guy where, because he's in the USHL, the production sort of gets tossed aside a little bit. But if he puts up a great freshman year at Michigan next year, he becomes, a really, really good prospect, because then you're looking at a guy who, has had 2 years of great production in two different leagues. So, he's a guy who seems to be mocked more in like the 10 to 14 range, but, if the Flyers are going to reach for a guy like that, I think Connor's a great fit. I love the speed. I would love for them to add a forward if they're going to pick a forward that can skate, and it seems like Connor is a speed demon, so.
Okay. I'm going to take us off topic for just 1 second. Go ahead, if you wanted to add something.
Oh, no, I was just going to say regarding Connor, I tried to put the post for him together for our community board. It was last week, and it is interesting because there's just not a ton of exposure out there for the USHL, so it's kind of hard to find stuff to say about a guy like him other than just watching him and seeing what you can out of there. But the ideal track for him, and I mentioned this, is something similar to what they had Detroit Red Wings prospect, a guy who we really liked for the Flyers last year, Dylan Larkin. He went, I think, 15th or 16th in the draft last year. after being in the U.S. National Team Development Program, of course, plays games against the USHL. Put up good numbers there. Went to Michigan and had one of the had a really, really good freshman year. Like, if it wasn't for Jack Eichel breaking records as a freshman this year, a lot more people would have been talking about what Dylan Larkin did. And now he's been signed by the Red Wings and will probably be in the AHL next year, but has an outside chance at making an impact at the NHL level pretty soon. And he's similar to Connor in a lot of ways. So there is precedent for guys like him making that jump from the USHL to being a high-level prospect. And both can skate well, play a good all-around game, so on and so on. So that's sort of the path that you hope someone like Connor could get. And if you're getting that at the seventh pick, you're not doing too bad at all.
Okay. In that vein, actually, one of our readers here on the post about our radio show actually wanted to ask you, Kurt, who you think would probably have the higher ceiling of Konechny, Connor, or Barzal.
Yeah, I see that down here. Let's see here. I think Barzal is the best one out of that group. I really do. I've seen a lot of people suggest that he got sidelined by knee injury for part of this year, but I've seen people suggest that had that not happened, he would be considered in this a de facto top five group of McDavid, Eichel, Marner, Stromme, and Hanifin. And I don't know if that's true. I admittedly do not follow the Western Hockey League close enough to know to say that with conviction. But the way he scored in the second half of the year after he really came back from that injury makes you think that it could happen, but or that it could be feasible. But I do think that he's probably the one who's the most exciting out of that group. He's not big, but he's not really small. He's like 6 foot, 6 foot one. And he does bring a lot to the table there. Great skater, really good offensive skills, good two-way player. Yeah, so I would think he probably is the best pro out of that group. From the other two, Konechny, I think, maybe offers a little more all-around game, whereas Connor maybe has higher upside. But I don't know. I like all three of those guys. But to answer which one is the best, I think I would have to say Barzal. Shame that the Flyers are probably not going to take him. But, yeah.
All right. Thanks to eTrain145 for that question. I just want to take a second and point out the absolute genius of Gary Bettman bringing a small child on stage with him at the NHL Awards to avoid getting booed. That's just perfect, in my opinion. But moving on, we've talked a lot about the number 7 pick for obvious reasons. Super exciting to have a top 10 pick in a draft this deep. But who are one or two guys that you've got in mind for our later pick at number 29? Charlie, you have any thoughts there?
Yeah, sure. I think there's a lot of guys who could slip, and it's just it's really tough to project with the 29th pick, just because I forget who reported it, but I think the consensus is that there's like 55 guys that at least, you know, a couple teams have a first round grade on, which, you know, yeah, we have an idea of, you know, who's in the general top 30 in the mock drafts we read, but my guess is that there, especially in the back half of the first round, there's going to be a lot of players taken that, you know, aren't necessarily in a lot of mock drafts. They may just be a little bit higher on, you know, on certain teams' boards. But, you know, some guys that I like, you know, one guy who I would like them to target, I don't know if he'll slip because he seems kind of like like the Travis Sanheim of this draft. I'd like them to target him if they don't go defense with the first pick, Noah Juulsen. He's a guy who, you know, really over the course of the year, he's a defenseman, and you know, he really saw his stock explode this season. And just sort of in a lot of ways is reminiscent of Sanheim in that he's a very, you know, I guess, balanced defenseman, put up you know, surprisingly strong numbers this year, stronger numbers in the WHL than I think anybody expected him to. And you know, he's a guy who, you know, you might be able to add to that big four if you don't come away with a Provorov. You know, a couple other guys who I like personally, but again, I have no idea if they're going to slip. Daniel Sprong is a guy who seems to have a lot of, you know, a whole ton of skills. There's some attitude concerns, I think, but he's a guy who would be a really cool pick if he slips. Trying to think who else off the top of my head. I know we projected Brock Boeser he's going to be committing to North Dakota, which is interesting because obviously Dave Haxtell coached North Dakota. So the cool thing about that is you obviously have some coaches input there to, you know, maybe he didn't necessarily coach him, but he clearly liked him enough to recruit him to the program and has probably watched a fair amount of tape on him. So if he liked him enough to bring him, I would hope that he can provide some insight to the scouting department on him. And, you know, it could be a cool fit there, and that would be a, you know, nice wing prospect to add to the fold. So there's three guys, I guess, that I really like, but I will I'll toss it over to Kurt. Maybe he has some others.
Sure. So, yeah, like Charlie said, I think it is important to remember, for as much as we, the general public, have certain names in mind, everyone's board looks different once you're in, like, the late teens and beyond. Like Charlie said, 50, 55 guys could have first-round grades, which is nuts and speaks to how good this draft is. And yeah, there's no guarantee that the guy the Flyers have in mind is one that we see in the first round in most mocks, that we see that we've really seen much of at all. I don't know. So yeah, to just pick a couple of names. Brock Boeser was the one who we took in our mock draft. I do like him, and the Haxtell connection does make it seem like that's a possibility. To pick a couple other names, Anthony Beauvillier, I think that's how you pronounce that, a winger and center from Shawinigan in the QMJHL. Had a really, really good year this past year. Put up 94 points, 42 goals in the QMJHL. And that's just, you know, that late in the first round, if you're hoping to just sort of take a home run swing, that's a guy who has the offensive talent that you may be looking for in a position like, in a spot like that. In terms of defense, one guy whose name, who I know a lot of people out there hoping drops to 29. I don't think it's going to happen. But one name is Swedish defenseman Oliver Kylington. So he was a guy who a lot of people were really high on going into the year, and then had some issues this year. I think he was hurt for a while. Just only played 18 games in Sweden's top league. But he is a guy that I know a lot of people are really high on. There's a pretty wide range on him depending on where you look, and there's a pretty good chance he's off the board there. But if he falls to 29, I think the Flyers would be hard-pressed to not take him. Let's see here. Some other ones. Another guy who I've seen a really wide range on, Jeremy Bracco, another center-winger combo from who played for the U.S. development team, will be at Boston College next year. He's a really small guy, but he's just got a lot of talent. Skate really fast and really exciting pick he'll be exciting for whoever picks him. Some risk there, but he could definitely end up being the guy who we look at later on down the road and be like, how did he only go this late? I've also seen some people who have him with the late second round grade, so who knows? Yeah, so those are three. No guarantee that any of them even fall. But yeah. That's about it. I thought about naming a goalie there, but I don't want to take a goalie with that last first round pick. Not that you can't get good goalie prospects here, but I think that it's, and Textall has pretty much come out and said we're going to take one or two goalies in this draft, but I don't think that he will look to do that with his first round pick.
Yeah, one would hope not, because I think it's been pretty much proven at this point that taking a goalie in the first round is just crazy pants. Doesn't need to be done.
Yeah, there's only one goalie that I generally see with a first round grade, and that's Ilya Samsonov who's played in Russia's second league, their minor league of sorts, and he's a good prospect. He's probably not one that that you would take at this point or that early in the draft. I know there was a lot of speculation the Flyers were looking to take a goalie with their second round pick last year. And then there was a run on them right up to their pick, so they instead took a Nicholas Abe-Kubel, which pick I was totally fine with, but they didn't end up taking any last month. And given how few goalie prospects actually work out, they do want to take one or two, but not at 29. Those guys are
high risk enough as it is.
Yes. Now, given that at this point the Flyers are pretty heavy on defensive prospects and pretty light on forward prospects, do you think it's important that the team selects at least one forward in the first round, maybe a winger, since we're pretty light on those? Charlie, you want to take that one?
Sure. I think it's important. I don't think it's an absolute necessity. In all honesty, my ideal draft would probably be them coming away with Provorov and Kylington, and that would be two defensemen. But that's just because I think Provorov is a top five talent, and Kylington's top 15, maybe even top 10 if it turns out that some of these defensive concerns are overblown when it comes to him and his prospect skill set. I can't say with 100% certainty that I want them to take a forward with one or more of the picks, but unless a really good defensive prospect were to slip to 29, if they had taken a Provorov, then I think it makes a lot of sense to go one and one, or even two forwards. I'm less concerned about the idea of taking a winger versus the center. In my mind, you take the most talented guy on the board. If you have a center and a winger, and you have the center a little bit higher, you shouldn't take a winger just because you need a natural winger. I think, a lot of talented players become wingers later on in their career. A lot of talented players are centers, in juniors because they're just the best player on the team. And then they, maybe as they get older, they start transitioning over to the wing because it'll be a better professional position. I think Konechny is a guy like that who, primarily plays center right now, but in watching him personally, I think he'll be a better fit on the wing as a pro. So, I don't think they should worry too much about the center-winger thing. At the same time, it would be nice if they came out of the first round with at least one forward. And if they, if they go the forward route with that seventh overall pick, I don't think you then have to take a defenseman. I mean, if a Kylington falls, then you probably should. But there's enough strong forward prospects that are going to be there at 29 that are going to fill needs for your organization that, I think you can justify going two forwards just because of the guys they have. And I think that it would show a lot of faith in the big four, as we call them, if they went two forwards in the first round. And I really wouldn't have a problem with it at all.
Kurt, thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, The short answer is take the guy who's the best player. I do think that there's, generally speaking, maybe a little bit more forward talent in this draft towards the top of this draft than there is defenseman talent on D. So I think there's a decent chance that whoever the best player is there ends up being a forward. I don't think it's crucial that they take two forwards, but I would kind of like to see one if a good talent falls. Like, I think there are maybe four, five, six defensemen who would be expected to be off the board by the time the Flyers are picking. And again, this is just based on general consensus. I have no idea what their board looks like. But after the top three of Hanifin, Provorov, and Zach Werenski, you've got Kylington, you've got Jeremy Roy? I don't know. From the QMJHL. Thomas Chabot, Jacob Zboril. I'm butchering so many names right now, guys. six, seven guys who I generally see as first-round talents in this draft. And if all of them, or if one of those guys drops to 29, and if you had him rated higher than that, I think you got to at least consider it. That said, it would be fun to see. It would be kind of cool to see another high-end forward prospect added to this team's ranks. But at the same time, we've spent years and years and years talking about how barren this team's defensive prospect core has been for decades, like how bad Flyers have been at developing defensive prospects. And I mean, there's so much risk in any defensive prospect. Like, in general, anyone is probably more likely than not to not pan out the way you expect them to. So the only way to counteract that is by getting more of them, by taking more shots at getting that player that you're looking for, by getting a player at that position. So, I mean, no, if you see a guy who you think has high-end talent there and he's a defenseman, even if you took Provorov at 7, you don't turn it down, I think. But I do hope that, I guess I do have a hope in the back of my mind that the Flyers do come away with a forward prospect in this draft who would be the best forward prospect currently in the organization. I like Scott Laughton, but I don't think he tops out as more than a decent to good second line forward. It would be cool to get someone with more upside than that. And who knows, maybe you get someone like that at 61. But with that said, if you elect to go for two more defensive prospects, two more sort of shots at that ultimate goal, getting good top four defensemen or good top pair defensemen, I wouldn't complain.
Yeah, it would really be nice to have a super exciting forward prospect, just somebody that you know is going to get in there and just snipe goals left and right. Like, I don't think it's so much to ask that maybe we have, like, a next Ovechkin. I don't know. I don't want to get crazy.
I think we can get that guy
at
29. Yeah.
Yeah.
we'll say there was a Travis Sanheim and a Nicholas Abe-Kubel were both selected for one of those Canada junior teams today. I don't remember which one it was, but that's a good sign. He might even be the best forward prospect in the organization. I would need to talk to someone who knows prospects better than me to really, really confirm that, but he had a great year in the Q this year, and the way he came on at the end of the year was really strong. Definitely, I think, what the Flyers were hoping to see of him. So that's one exciting winger prospect. But, yeah, I think that there's a decent chance that if you pick a forward at 29, you could come away with someone even better.
Yeah, that would be pretty great to see. Moving on to one of my favorite things heading into the draft, which is crazy trade rumors. I think we all like to see that little pause in the draft order and hope that you see Bettman walk up to that podium to announce a trade. So getting onto that topic, the rumors that have been swirling around lately center around Phoenix and that number 3 pick. Apparently they've been fielding calls about possibly trading down to a lower pick in the top 10 in exchange for that 3rd pick. Let's hear from you guys what package you would put together to offer Phoenix for that number 3 pick. Charlie, you want to take that first?
Yeah. So I guess, you know, number 1, I think any package from 7 to 3 is going to have to include a second first-round pick, and the Flyers happen to have a second first-round pick. So I think it's reasonable to think they've at least had discussions with with Phoenix and maybe Toronto, if the rumors from a couple weeks ago are true, that they were potentially interested in trading down. I do think that's probably a starting point. So, you know, for them to not hang up the phone, you have to be offering 2 first-round picks, and then we'll talk. So past that, you know, I'm not sure. I'd probably be willing to give up one of the 3rd-round picks the Flyers have to sweeten the pot a little bit. I don't think that would be enough for them to do the deal, but I don't think I'd be willing to give up much more than that, because I do think this is a really important draft for the Flyers to restock their prospect pool. At the same time, you know, the jump from 7 to 3 is pretty substantial, especially in this draft because of the way the tiers break down. You know, you've got, obviously, McDavid and Eichel are, you know, in their own universe. But past that, you've got the Marner, Strome, Hanifin tier, and it seems like Provorov's kind of knocking on the door to that tier as well as we get closer to the draft. And you go up to 3, you're guaranteed, you know, your pick of those 4 guys. So, you know, it's important because, you know, those 2 centers have, you know, real 1C upside, and then the 2 defensemen have real top pairing upside. And, you know, it seems like all 4 of them don't have a ton of risk. Obviously there's, you know, risk inherent in any prospect, but, you know, those 4 guys seem like their floors are pretty high, especially in comparison to a lot of the guys that are in the, you know, 6 to 14 tier, you know, guys like Zaka, who are, you know, real high-risk, high-reward guys, you know, Connor, who we discussed, who's a little bit, you know, untested at the highest levels, you know, there's more risk there, and you're paying for the higher likelihood of those guys becoming, you know, real NHL contributors at a high level. So a trade makes sense, I think, from a value standpoint. You know, saying the 7, the 29, and the third-round pick, I think that's fair value for Phoenix. I don't know if they would do it, but I think, you know, that's about as fair of an offer as I'd be willing to give. And if they want more, if they want a roster player, I say no, and I stay at 7, and then, you know, cross my fingers that a guy like Provorov slips.
Kurt, before we move on to you, just a quick question for Charlie. Given how deep this draft is, and given the relative shallow pool that the Flyers are working with prospect-wise, do you think it's worth it for the Flyers then to give up the possibility of two potentially good players being added to their system in exchange for one almost guaranteed good player to be added to the system? Do you think it's worth, you know, sacrificing quantity for quality in this particular situation?
I would say yes to a point. Obviously, you know, there's a point where you're, you know, making a Ricky Williams style trade and giving up every single pick to get one guy, and that's ridiculous, especially considering the amount of picks the Flyers come into the draft with, and, you know, the effort that Hextall put into building up this many picks, considering the situation he was left with from Paul Holmgren, who apparently didn't value picks at all. But but anyway, you know, I think it's worth it because the value of having, you know, a top six forward on a cheap contract for those first 3 years and then having RFA, you know, control for even more, I think it's, you know, it's huge, and it's the kind of thing that can, you know, really carry a team either all the way to the top, or it can erase some mistakes in terms of bad contracts that you made, which the Flyers are certainly grown accustomed to. So I think it's worth it. I think, you know, I don't want to see them give up five picks and move up four spots, but, you know, two I would definitely do, three I would probably do, just because of the increased likelihood that a guy you're getting at three is going to pan out, or at the very least be, you know, an NHL contributor, and obviously you're hoping for them to be, you know, that, you know, superstar that you can, you know, lock in your lineup for the next 10-plus years.
Okay. Kurt, what kind of package would you put together for the third pick?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I would I should have thought about this a bit. I mean, a couple weeks ago I put an article together asking if people would, when we thought Toronto was maybe the most likely team to trade down, I mentioned I'd put together a package of just those two first-round picks to move up to four. And I think that was made. I think that the voting for that on our site was something like 60-40 in favor of I would not make that trade. I would definitely make that trade. For three, I would absolutely do it, since you're guaranteed your choice of any of those guys. But I also don't believe for a second that Phoenix would do that. I think that – I know that there were rumors yesterday, I think it was Craig Custance of ESPN mentioned that one of those that one of the teams that was offering to trade with Phoenix offered up another – like was offering up a young player to make that – or to try and, like, make a deal up to number three happen. I don't think that was the Flyers. Because, first of all, the only guy who I really think of that could maybe fit that description for them that would really bridge that gap would probably be Sean Couturier. And I think Hextall knows how good he is and also realizes that his value to the general public as a guy who a lot of people think is, quote-unquote, disappointed at the eighth overall pick, you know, has never scored like a half point per game. I think Hextall knows how valuable he is. He sort of stood up for Couturier against his old head coach in his press conference that week after the season ended, right before Berube was fired. He went and said, we're not trading we really like Sean Couturier. We think he's done a great job. So if we're working under the assumption that he's the guy that he's like the only one who would really be a young player that the Flyers could trade in that deal, then I don't know if they're going to be big contenders for that spot. that said, I would offer go up to 3. I would definitely offer 7 and 29. And then from there, it would sort of depend on who you like more. Like, so if what Saravalli said today was true and the Flyers really have Provorov at 3 on their board, it would imply that they think he would – it realistically would imply that they think he'd be far and away the best prospect on their team. And if it takes one of those 4 defensive prospects to bridge that gap, then I think you do it. But meanwhile, like, I personally would say I'd have Mitch Marner at number 3 on my board. So – I say 7-29 and offer Phoenix any forward prospect, any one forward prospect in our system. I'd do that. I would do that. Either that or like a 3rd round pick, like Charlie said. Again, it all depends on how much you like the guys at the top of the draft. And to your other point. Actually, other question as to whether or not whether quantity matters more than quality. I think quantity is great, and we saw Tampa this year. Like, they're one of the only teams in the East, I think, that's in position to get a whole lot better before it gets much worse, because they've got so many guys who are on these good young good contracts. They're young guys who are on cheap deals for the next few years. They'll be able to re-sign Steven Stamkos because they've got so many guys on these cheap deals so they can afford to pay their superstars. And it is important to have those guys. But at the same time, I think that one really, 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 really good player pushes the needle more than one really good player, even more than like one really good player and one good player, which is, I think, what you think you're getting at 7 and 29. If you don't think there's much of a gap between 3 and whoever you're going to get at 7, then it's probably not worth it. I personally would have Marner a tier above. I'm using Marner as the example here, but I would have him like a tier above any forward the Flyers would be able to get at 7. I think that really, really good quality is better than quantity. But if you don't think it's a huge quality gap, then yeah, take the 2 good players.
Okay. One question I have for the both of you is I find it interesting that in your prospective trade packages, you are just trading picks. Don't you think that Phoenix, in the position that they're in now, would be more interested in some established young players on favorable contracts, maybe like a Shen or I agree with you that I don't think Couturier is going to get traded under any circumstances, but do you think that Phoenix would be looking more for NHL players than picks, or do you think that they would do a package just for picks?
You know, I really don't know, because there's just so much uncertainty right now with that organization. I'm not sure if they prefer to stockpile, you know, prospects with the goal of, you know, building for the future, or if they'd rather, you know, get some young established talent on decent deals because they're trying to get to the floor. I'm not sure. I mean, I think if I were them, I'd probably prefer the picks, because number one, you're not spending that much money immediately, and number two, you know, if some of those guys pan out, you're probably going to be more attracted to potential buyers if you have to sell. That's just my personal opinion. But, you know, another reason why I didn't add any players to the deal is because, you know, truthfully, I don't really want to give any of them up. You know, I could easily see the Coyotes being interested in Braden Schenn. I don't want to give up Braden Schenn in a deal like that. And the reason is that, you know, around the draft, we kind of get caught up in the whole shiny new toy thing about, you know, oh, well, this guy looks so good. His upside is this. You know, he could be. And you notice that whenever they do comparables, it's always comparing them to all-stars. So you get really excited because, you know, obviously Provorov is going to be the next Ekman Larson. And, you know, obviously Marner is going to be the next Patrick King.
No, he's the next Bronner.
Oh, okay, next
Bronner. Definitely.
Everyone's
the next Bronner. Don't forget it, guys. You'll hear it on Friday. Don't worry.
But in any case, you know, we get all excited about these guys, and the fact of the matter is that a lot of these guys are 2-3 years away from the pros, and a lot of these guys aren't going to pan out. And, you know, Braden Schenn maybe has not become what we hoped he would become, but he's still a productive second-line winger. And you're basically trading a productive second-line winger for a guy that, you know, has a, you know, maybe 10% chance of being better than that, a 40% chance of being that, and then, you know, a 30% chance of being a worse NHL player than Braden Schenn, and, you know, however many percentage points are left of not making the NHL at all. So, you know, I think, you know, you don't want to get caught up in the idea of, well, he could be better. Braden Schenn's a useful player. You don't really want to give him up necessarily for an uncertain asset. Now, at the same time, if you get the Coyotes on the phone and they're interested in, you know, Luke Schenn or, you know, God's be praised, Nicholas Grossman, then, yeah, you throw those players their way. But I can't imagine they would be that interested in, you know, middling to flat-out bad players. So, yeah, I mean, if you can get them to take one of the defensemen that you're trying to pull off on someone because they're looking for, you know, contracts to get to the floor, then, yeah, you jump at that. But I really wouldn't want to give them, you know, an established NHL contributor in a trade to move up a couple picks because I'm not certain that the guy you're going to get is necessarily going to be better, and the certainty, to me, is more valuable.
It's hard to argue with any of that. but in that vein, do you think that we see any current Flyers move this weekend? Do you think that Hextall makes any moves with the current roster? You know, like maybe a team that's looking to reach the floor by about $18 million once a slightly used Andrew McDonald, or I don't know. But
I mean,
what do you think the odds are that we see somebody move this weekend?
I mean, yeah, Andrew McDonald's not going to move. The only way I can see Andrew McDonald
don't put that
moved,
in the universe.
The only way I can see him getting moved is an idea that I've seen a few people toss out there a couple of times that I see almost no chance of this happening. It would be if the Flyers package a draft pick, potentially that second first-round pick, but if the Flyers package a draft pick with Andrew McDonald to get another team to take his contract. And I don't think Hextall wants to do that. I don't think any of us want to do that. So I don't think McDonald's going anywhere. Someone like Grossman and Schenn, it's possible. Maybe Michael Delzato's rights get traded. I do think that at draft weekend, when teams have all these, going back to the shiny new toy theory that Charlie was just floating, that is very, very true, by the way. It's true of all drafts and all leagues all the time. Right when you've got all these teams at the draft, most of them, I mean, they've got other things on their plate, but most of them are just looking at all these guys that they've scouted all year and are like, ooh, we really want that guy. We like his potential. We think he can be great. And most teams want to hang on to their draft picks now. Like, draft picks are more valuable this weekend than they are at any other time. And, I mean, you sort of have to hope that someone, like, forgets for a second that it is draft weekend and, like, doesn't value them more highly at that moment than a guy that you're hoping to salary dump. Doesn't mean it doesn't happen. I mean, we've seen guys get traded in years past, you know. Dave Boland got traded for like 3 draft picks a couple years ago. And again, that was back when Toronto had Dave Nonis in charge. So, you know, you can't really bank on that. there were a couple trades last year. I don't remember who. There were some trades after the draft last year by teams that were looking to clear some cap space for free agency. I know Tampa, for instance, basically got Anton Strahlman, one of the biggest moves last offseason, because they cleared off cap space. It was the Sunday night after the draft. But, yeah, that said, I saw 2 different articles today, one from Mark Spector over at Sportsnet and another one from someone at NHL.com, who I don't remember, both floating Nicholas Grossman as a potential trade piece for other teams. So it does confirm the idea that this isn't just like a pipe dream of Flyers fans to get him traded. It is something that legitimately could happen. I'm not counting on it happening at the draft. It would be really cool if it did, you know, get another pick this year, maybe even just get a pick for next year. But yeah, I would maybe put the odds of just between now and like the end of the day on Saturday, I would maybe put the odds of someone like Grossman or Luke Schenn getting traded at like 35-40%, not based on any hard inside information. But yeah, I think it's possible, but I think teams are going to lean towards keeping their picks now.
Charlie, any thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I think if anybody's going to get traded, I would guess it's Grossman. It seems like there's at least a little bit of momentum there, and I think that, you know, one positive for the possibility of Grossman being traded is that he was on the block at the trade deadline last year. So, you know, this is where, you know, maybe some talks that started back in, you know, in February and March, you know, maybe get closer to coming to fruition, especially if, you know, it seems like a team in the fourth round, you know, hasn't got their defensive prospects like they thought they were going to. And they think, well, you know, rather than, you know, take a flyer on a guy who maybe has a, you know, 20% chance of being an NHLer, why don't we get Nicholas Grossman? Now, granted, I honestly would still probably rather have that guy who has a 20% chance than Nicholas Grossman, but some GMs may think differently. I don't think Shen will get moved at the draft, but, you know, you never know. I feel like if he were to get moved, he'd get moved in an actual interesting trade rather than just a player for pick, because I think Luke Shen actually has, you know, maybe not an incredible amount of value, but he has decent value, and you could theoretically see a team be interested in him because they think they can do something with his potential over the rest of his 20s, whereas Grossman is pretty clearly, you know, he is what he is. He's a third-pairing, stay-at-home defenseman who plays on the penalty kill. So I would say if anybody gets through it, I think it's Grossman. I don't necessarily think it's going to happen, but, you know, maybe I'll say a little bit higher than Kurt, maybe, you know, 40 to 45%. I don't want to say it's a coin flip because I'm not going into the draft expecting it to happen, but I'll tell you, I'm certainly hoping.
Yeah, it would be nice to see some moves made. Just because, like we talked about last week, one of the most exciting things about this team at this point is that it could go anywhere. So it would be kind of cool to see Hextall maybe pull the trigger on a move or two that would change the current roster in addition to improving the prospect pool. That would be kind of fun to see.
Yeah, I mentioned when we did a press for a radio a couple weeks ago, not last week, but whenever the last one before that was, I think given that like almost the entirety of a team that finished 24th in the NHL last year is locked into its contract this year, I think that really introducing sort of any unknowns and question marks that aren't obvious negatives, I think really introducing sort of any mystery aspect is a good thing right now. Just because, I mean, that we, as much as Ron Hextall hopes and is hoping to have a good team next year, I think we all know that unless he's able to work a couple miracles in the next week, this is probably not going to be a playoff team in 2015-16. So really anything he can do to sort of just shake up what was in place and sort of toss something out there that could maybe be a contributing part of this rust, be a contributing part of a team that's good again, maybe as soon as 2016. Anything he can do to sort of shake that up would be welcomed. So, and trading a player on the roster that isn't an obvious core piece qualifies for that. So,
okay, let's move away from the draft for just a minute, because today was kind of an exciting day as far as NHL news goes. Gary Bettman announced that the league would be formally beginning the expansion process, so we're going to see some new teams, which is pretty exciting, along with some changes to the overtime format and a coaches challenge. Do you guys have any thoughts that you would like to share about those things?
Yeah, sure. So I guess with the expansion, you know, we all sort of saw this coming. You know, I think, you know, ever since they adjusted the conferences and, you know, made them kind of uneven, you got the impression that, you know, there was going to be expansion, there were going to be new teams. It's nice to hear that confirmed that, you know, over the next, you know, 2-3 years, you know, this is now a formal process, and it's going to be fun. You know, as a hockey fan, this is going to be fun because, number one, you have a lot of really good markets out there that don't have teams. Honestly, you have a lot of markets out there that don't have teams that are probably better hockey markets than markets right now that have teams. So I think, you know, it's going to be difficult for them to screw this up, which is a good feeling to have as an NHL fan. You know, it seems like the three leaders, at least, you know, in this early stage are Las Vegas, Quebec City, and Seattle. Vegas seem to have the most infrastructure right now. Quebec City having the most history and Seattle maybe having the most upside just in terms of being a large market that, you know, obviously looking at, you know, football and even, you know, soccer and the MLS, they have, you know, very passionate fans up there in the Pacific Northwest. I you know, out of those three, you know, I really hope Seattle gets a team. I don't know if they're going to have an arena, but I just think that's such an untapped resource for the NHL. And, you know, if you can sell out MLS games, I don't see any reason why you won't be able to sell out NHL games personally. But it's exciting. You know, it's really exciting. And, you know, if and when expansion happens, we're going to see things like expansion drafts, which will be fun. And maybe it'll give Flyers fans away a dream that Andrew McDonald might finally be able to leave the team, which will be fun as a Flyers fan. But it's a fun time. And, you know, I think it's going to be real difficult for them to screw it up now. You know, watch them give it to, you know, Sudbury, Thunder Bay, and make 538 real happy. But
that's a huge market, though. You can't deny the hugeness of the Thunder Bay.
Literally, it spans across hundreds of kilometers.
Yes,
it's a very, very large market. I'll have to agree to there. A lot of Google searches of the NHL. But as an NHL fan, it's fun, and I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, what kind of bids come out and who gets teams. I think it'll be fun. I think there's a large enough talent pool that, you know, the NHL can easily sustain two more teams, and I'm excited to see what happens.
So, just real quick, another aside, since I'm half watching the NHL Awards while we do this radio show. Didn't our own Travis Hughes vote in the awards this year?
He did. Yes, he did.
He just mentioned
his Calder ballot, I think.
I don't see a single vote for Steve Mason to get the Vezina Award.
Well,
that's curious.
Well, those are... Well, Vezina's voted on by the GMs, right?
Oh, that's right. That's right. Okay, so Travis gets a pass since he's not yet an NHL GM. So I guess we'll let that one slide.
Gotta get on that.
I guess.
Okay.
Cool.
What do you guys? Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm not watching the NHL awards right now, but it is cool. It is cool. I mean, just to sort of piggyback on expansion talk. I mean, the league is clearly interested in Las Vegas as an expansion team. They had the season ticket drive that went as well as anyone could possibly have expected. I think Travis mentioned today they've got some 12,000-13,000 commitments pledges for that season ticket drive in what's expected to be a 17,000-18,000 seat arena. There are pictures of the progress they're making on that. I think that'll be fascinating. Assuming Vegas gets a team eventually, and I think that is going to happen, I think that'll be fascinating to watch just because, I mean, team leagues have shied away from that for years, and, I mean, it may be the kind of market that is at first fueled by visiting fans, people coming in, being like, wow, this is so cool. But, I mean, it won't be pretty at first because expansion rosters never are. But I think that could be really fun if some things break right and they start building a fan base there, if they have fun with it. I think that could be a really cool destination. And like Charlie said, I think Seattle makes too much sense not to put a team there. I mean, they're probably going to get an NBA team back at some point in the future, and having an NHL team to coincide with that, to share that arena, it would make a lot of sense. And that city is able to support like any sports team that's there. Yeah, like you said, they go nuts for their MLS team, for their football team, of course, which is good. And even when their baseball team was bad, they loved the Mariners. So, I mean, yeah, so those are exciting possibilities. And that's not even to mention all the small Canadian markets that would probably still be able to support a team, whether they're Googling NHL or not. So, yeah, I think that would be cool to see. Kelly,
yeah,
what do you think about it?
I agree that Las Vegas, which seems like a foregone conclusion at this point, is going to be interesting to watch because I feel like you're going to have this weird situation where you have mostly sold-out games just based on the fact that, you know, these tickets are probably going to be gobbled up by casinos. They're going to be comped. You're going to have visiting fans going to see their team playing in Las Vegas. So you're probably going to have really good attendance, and you're going to have, you know, a lot of buzz around the team. But then I wonder, are you going to have an actual passionate fan base? Like, is it going to be a team that has a lot of emotional support? It's just like, I can't imagine in a city like Vegas that's mostly tourist-based, you know, what kind of fan base, like a real, you know, I hate to say Philadelphia-style, just a passionate, crazy fan base, if that's going to be something that's built there, or if it's just going to be a situation where you're selling out games, but no one really cares about the actual Las Vegas, whatever they're called. So I think that'll be interesting to see how that goes.
It's possible it breaks that way. At the same time, I'm guessing there are enough people, enough actual sports fans, not just, you know, crazy people who like to bet on sports games, but actual sports fans in that area who have thought for a long time that it would be cool to have a professional team there. So, you know, I mean, I think that there will be folks there who will definitely latch onto that. Hopefully it's enough to make that a, like, fun arena to go to when that team eventually comes around, which it seems likely it will.
Yeah, I hope so, because I mean, you want to see a team develop a really good fan base. You don't want to, you know, just have a bunch of fairweathers going to games when they feel like it. But I think the thing that interests me the most about today's announcements is this new overtime format, because I kind of hate it a lot. I think I've said several times, just in general, that I think that the best way to go about fixing the NHL's overtime problem is to get less gimmicky and just make it a bit longer. You know, go 4-on-4 for 10 minutes, you're probably going to cut down on a hell of a lot of shootouts, and you don't have to do this weird thing where you're stopping and going from 4-on-4 to 3-on-3. It's just, I mean, I'm sure that 3-on-3 hockey is going to be exciting. It'll be fun to watch, especially the Flyers. You know, we can put out three pretty exciting players. So I'm sure it'll be fun, but just for me, I kind of find it a little gimmicky. Charlie, what do you think of this new overtime format?
I guess on one hand, anything to cut down on the number of shootouts is, I guess, better than the status quo. So on one hand, I don't hate it. On the other hand, I do agree with you that, you know, you're basically just solving a problem with a gimmick by making it more gimmicky. So yeah, you know, it's not ideal. To me, the ideal solution, which it doesn't seem like is going to happen, is just switching the point structure to make, you know, create like a 3-2-1-0 point structure where regulation wins are worth more than overtime and shootout wins, or maybe just shootout wins. Maybe if you win the game in overtime flat out, you still get the 3 points, but if you win in a shootout, you only get 2, which, you know, I think in terms of changing the incentives of teams would make it so overtime play is a little bit more wide open and you have less teams just playing for a shootout, which really, in my mind, is the biggest problem, is that, you know, if teams are good at shootouts, they just sit back and basically try to hang on for 5 minutes because they trust that their team can win the skills competition, which, number one, creates bad hockey, and number two, if you're, you know, a purist hockey fan that doesn't necessarily like the shootout, it's even more annoying. And then if you're a Flyers fan whose team is absolutely awful in the shootouts, it's even worse. So, you know, that would be my ideal setup. I don't think it's ever going to happen because I think they like everybody being bunched together to make the end-of-season races in terms of making the playoffs more exciting. But, you know, I think it's better than what they have now because there will probably be less shootouts, which in my mind is a good thing. So I guess overall, better than what they have, still don't love it, but, you know, I think it's an improvement.
Kurt,
yeah,
how about you?
I mean, honestly, if I had my way, just in regards to the point structure and all that, I think what Charlie said is right. It would be ideal to have every game be worth the same amount of points, but the league and the GM, and more importantly, the GMs, like this structure where three quarters of the league's teams are quote unquote over 500, because GMs can go to their bosses and say, hey, I've been over 500. I know I haven't made the playoffs in 5 years, but I'm always over 500. So I think I'm doing a great job. What say you? But yeah, I honestly wouldn't be opposed. This is never, ever, ever going to happen again. I'm aware of this, but I honestly wouldn't be opposed to just going back to ties once overtime ended. But
yes.
Again, I think that's better than doing a shootout, just because I think it's sort of a more, sort of more reflective of the actual hockey going on the ice. But yeah, I mean, I know that's not going to happen. Really, I just, as few games as possible to end in shootouts. I think that 3-on-3 is only a half step above, like, above shootouts in terms of ridiculousness in hockey, but it is at the very least hockey being played on the ice. It is something that you could see happening in a game. I thought it was interesting that the AHL plans, I think it's 3 minutes of 4-on-4, then after the first stoppage, after that, you go to 3-on-3 for the remainder of the 7 minutes. I think that it was interesting that, according to Bob McKenzie, that plan was like roundly shot down by the players. So I don't know. Maybe they're just tired enough at the end of games as is and didn't feel like having an extra 2 minutes added on. 2 minutes they would have to skate, 2 minutes they weren't getting paid for. I don't know. But yeah, it sounded like that method went well in the AHL and was successful in cutting down shootouts, so I thought they'd go for that. But I don't know. I don't love it, but I like it more than what we had before.
Yeah, I know we're in the minority, but I never had a problem with ties. There were some really exciting hockey games that ended in a tie, and I don't think it was so many games ending in ties that it constituted a problem that needed solving, but I don't run a professional sports league, so what do I know? So the other thing that was announced was my mind just went totally blank, the change to the overtime, the expansion, and, oh, the coach's challenge. So what do you guys think of the coach's challenge? Kurt, we can start with you this time.
I don't have strong feelings about it. I mean, I think they said it's just applying for goalie interference and offsides. I mean, it's a good change. I mean, offsides is a very black and white thing. That should never have not been reviewable, and I think the fact that it is, it's a good thing. Goalie interference, I mean, that's entirely subjective depending on who you talk to all the time. So, I mean, I don't know how much is really going to change there. But yeah, I mean, at the very least, bringing in for offsides, definitely a good idea.
Charlie.
Yeah, I think it's a good starting point. In all honesty, I wouldn't even be opposed to them just not doing coaches' challenges and just making the plays reviewable. I don't know how you would do that, you know, structurally, but, you know, offside should have been reviewable from the get-go. Interference, I understand why it's a coaches' challenge, because, as Kurt said, it's very subjective, but, you know, there's a ton of other things that are, you know, capable of being reviewed. You know, some bad penalties, you know, maybe could be reviewed and turn either if they really miss a call or if they, you know, just, you know, see a guy get high stick, but the stick never actually touched the guy's face. You know, those are things that I think over the next, you know, 5-10 years, probably when, you know, somebody loses a Stanley Cup over something ridiculous, they'll add it in the following year because it's the big things that, you know, actually get people to make changes. I mean, there were a few big things in this playoffs where missed offsides occurred, and I'm pretty sure that's the main reason why that was added this time, because GMs decided that, well, we can't have that again. So I think it's a good starting point, because every year you're going to see the next big controversy get addressed, which is good. You know, I think there should always be more accuracy in the way that the game is officiated. So, I don't have a problem with it. Obviously, in an ideal world, the officials would just get everything right, but that's not feasible just because of human error. So the closer they can get to getting as much right as possible, the better, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think it's hard to argue with anything that would bring us closer to less blown calls on the ice. It's not something that you ever want to see. And when it happens, it kind of ruins a game for the most part. So moving towards getting less of those, I think, is a good thing. Okay. Anything else that you wanted to add about today's announcements?
I think that's about everything I wanted to say. Kurt, did you have anything else?
Yeah, no, in terms of today's stuff, I think we're good. I haven't really been paying attention. Twitter moves fast when I'm on radio. Have any Flyers gotten any votes at awards tonight? I haven't seen one.
I believe that
Couturier.
We are... Oh, did we get something?
No, I didn't see Couturier on the list, on the selkie list that I was looking at, but that may have just been the first column. He probably got like a fourth or fifth place vote or something. I don't know. I'll look that up.
I would hope. I know I saw, I'm not sure who's running Broad Street Hockey's Twitter account tonight, but I did see earlier that we had no votes. I'm not sure how far into the awards we had gotten at that point, but it doesn't look like a lot of Flyers are getting many votes. I was kind of surprised there were no votes for GM of the Year, but I guess not.
Well, one point I would like to make, and not to say that I think Craig Berube should have gotten a vote for the Jack Adams Award. However, it appears that Randy Carlyle got a third place vote for the Jack Adams Award, and I think Berube at least deserved to be ranked higher than him. So,
way to go, guys.
I'm assuming that was just an angry Toronto reporter who didn't think Carlyle got a fair shake, even though he was terrible. But really, really a third place vote to Randy Carlyle? Come on, guys.
Well, okay, I'm always trying to forget or remember. I'm always forgetting who does which. The Jack Adams, I think, is voted on by the broadcasters, right? Is that right?
Okay. Yeah, it looks
like
the broadcasters.
I think that's right. So some old fart in a broadcast booth really likes Randy Carlyle, which, I mean, okay. Okay.
There was kind of a weird, like, old guard Toronto media cocoon of support that formed around Randy Carlyle when he got fired that I did not understand. It was very strange. But Toronto's media is the only media that makes Philadelphia's media look reasonable, so I guess it's to be expected that it would be crazy up there.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go back to the draft before we wrap things up for the night. Kurt, I'll start with you. What, in your mind, would be the best and worst case scenarios for the Flyers draft this weekend?
Yeah. I'll mostly work around the number 7 pick here because, I mean, the best case scenario for everything else is you take the best player because, I mean, everything beyond that or everything sort of beyond that lottery range, the odds are against any one of those guys by themselves succeeding. So, I mean, for those guys, just sort of sit back and hope. So I'll mostly focus on the top 7 here. Best and worst case scenario, I think both revolve around some sort of deviation from that top 5. So if the top 5 takes out the way most expected to, which is to say McDavid, Eichel, 1-2, Strome, Marner, and Hanifin in some order go 3-4-5, that's what most expect to happen. So then it sort of comes down to the New Jersey Devils, what they would do, whether they would take Ivan Provorov, who's probably the best player on the board there, or whether they would fill the need to take a forward, given that they have nothing at all in the way of good young forwards on the team, like nothing. So in that sense, the best case scenario would be for one of those top 5 teams to sort of go off the board, take someone like Matthew Barzal, who the Flyers were probably not interested in, because then that guarantees that either one of those top-end forwards or one of the two top defensemen, Provorov or Noah Hanifin, falls to number 7, and I think Ron Hextall would be thrilled to see that happen. So the best case is that one of those 3 to 5 teams goes off the board. It's also actually the worst case in that if one of those 3 to 5 teams takes Ivan Provorov and then another one takes Noah Hanifin, and that hurts for a number of reasons because it's unlikely, but it's possible that one of those teams takes Provorov in that top 5 there. And then, because if that happens, then New Jersey, your division rival, who has desperately needed a good young forward for like a decade, then they get Stromer or Marner, guys who would probably be in the conversation for number one overall in an average year. And they get the four they so desperately need, and then the Flyers are left picking out through everything that's left, which would be less than ideal. I mean, most of us at this point are hoping that Provorov falls to seven, and it would be a shame if that doesn't happen and nothing else, and none of the other stuff breaks their way. So, yeah, best case is top five team goes off the board and guarantees one of those sort of top six falls to the Flyers. Worst case would be two of the defensemen go in the top five and the Flyers are shut out of that group.
Charlie, what would be your best case and worst case scenario?
So I think the best case scenario, I think Kurt, you know, really hit the nail right on the head. You know, maybe your absolute best case scenario is, you know, one of, you know, maybe Marner slips because people start freaking out about size for some reason and he somehow makes it to seven in a Couturier-esque fall and the Flyers can snap him up. That's extremely unlikely, but you never know. You know, maybe the Devils really, really like Pavel Zacha. That's what's rumored, and they take him at six and somehow Marner gets to seven. The realistic best-case scenario, though, is exactly what Kurt said. You know, Provorov, who it seems like the Flyers like, it seems like pretty much all the fans like, gets the seven and the Flyers snap him up. And then at 29, you know, we talked about some guys, but, you know, in my mind, the best case scenario is they pick a guy with really high upside. You know, we both talked about Kylington as a possibility. There's a Russian player named Denis Gurianov who I like as a, you know, real high upside guy. He's not, they don't have, there's not a ton of tape on him because he plays over in Russia, and there's obviously the fear that, you know, he might not stay in the NHL or might not come over at all. But, you know, apparently he has the skill set to match a lot of the guys in the top 10. And if he were to slip to 29, I think that would be an awesome pick because, you know, at that first round, I think you really should be going with high upside. So that'd be a cool pick. I'd love for that to be a, you know, to be a scenario for the Flyers. Worst case, you know, I guess my worst case scenario and one that I've sort of been dreading for a couple weeks is the Flyers at seven take Lawson Crouse, who, I mean, although I don't dislike him as much as other people do, he's not my top choice for seven. If they're going to go with the, you know, high upside big forward, I'd rather them go with Zacha than Crouse. And I guess also Connor, I'd much rather them go for than Crouse. But it's possible I like Crouse, and if Crouse is seven, then I'm, you know, I'm not thrilled, not, you know, devastated, but I'm not thrilled. But the real worst case scenario would be if they then followed that up at 29 by taking Samson off the goalie. And if they were to take, you know, forward I'm not ultra high on, and then take a goalie in the first round, considering how risky they can be, I'd be pretty disappointed. And I don't think that scenario is completely out of the realm of possibilities, so it worries me a little bit. But I'm hoping that that's not the route they go, because that would put me in a pretty bad mood for Saturday.
Okay, so now that we've heard what you think are the best and worst outcomes for the Flyers, what do you think is the most likely outcome? Charlie, let's go to you first this time.
You know, I keep looking at, I tweeted this last night, I keep looking at the board, and, you know, I want to be realistic, and I want to think that, you know, someone's going to take Provorov because he's just too high of a talent. It seems like so many teams, you know, have him high on their board. It seems like Toronto is trying to talk themselves out of taking him at four because they know it's a little bit of a reach, but they love the guy so much. So, you know, the rational side of me says that, you know, he's not going to be there, but then I look at the teams and it's just, it's hard for me to see him not being there, just because I do think that the Devils are going to go with one of Barzal or Zacha at six, even if Provorov's on the board, because they have just such a huge organizational need at forward. So I'm going to go with Provorov, but I do think that if he's gone, I think the most likely pick for the Flyers is Zacha, and that'll be a controversial pick, almost as, if not as controversial as Crouse, just because he's similar in that his production hasn't been great. He has some, you know, some slightly better excuses than Crouse in that his first year in North America, he was injured for a while, he was suspended for a while. But the production is not necessarily there, and he's a high-risk guy because doesn't seem like he's ultra great on the defensive side, so you're basically banking on his, you know, great skill set panning out. I think last week I mentioned Ryan Johansson from Columbus, you know, kind of a similar skill set, you know, similar mediocre production in his draft year, and then obviously broke out and became, you know, a great first-line center for Columbus. That's what you're hoping for. And I think the Flyers like him. I think he'll be there unless the Devils take him. And if the Devils take him, then I think the Flyers are taking Provorov. But I would say, you know, Provorov have had to make a bet, but don't rule out Zacha.
Kurt,
yeah,
over to you.
I think that Charlie laid out most of the realistic possibilities there. The one thing I keep coming back to, I think most people think New Jersey should take a forward. I don't know of any Devils fans that I've talked to that don't want them to take a forward, but I keep coming back to the idea that that Ray Shiro in his time in Pittsburgh did always lean towards taking defensemen. It's why Pittsburgh has a pretty good young set of defensive prospects they're looking to bring in next year, and it's also why they've had so much trouble getting forward depth to surround Crosby and Malkin all those years. So maybe I just don't want to get my hopes up too much for Provorov, because I think he is the guy that everyone from the Flyers front office to most of the people we talk to on the site and on Twitter want. But, yeah, I'll try to not get my hopes up too much here. And I'll say the top five goes as expected in whatever order. And the Devils take Provorov at six. And like Charlie said, I do think the Flyers like Zacha. I think they would go for him at seven. And we'll probably let him sit in the OHL for another year, and then we'll see what happens from there. So that said, I wouldn't really be surprised. That said, the Devils probably should take a forward there. I don't like to advise against doing any – I don't like to advise on doing anything other than taking the best player available, but they should probably take a forward. Their current NHL roster has two forwards under the age of 30. They need a forward like yesterday. But knowing Ray Shiro, I don't know if that's what he'll actually do. So I'll try to hedge a little bit and say that they take Zacha at seven. And then
I'm going to be super negative. Go ahead.
Oh, and then I was going to say, I think they hold on to their other first runner. I don't think they make a trade. And at 29, I think they'll take it. If they go with Zacha at seven, I think they'll take a defenseman at 29. If one of those other seven drops, the seven guys that I usually see in the first round, if one of them drops, then I think they'll take him. I think Hextall knows that he needs to build as many good defensive prospects as possible. So, yeah, you go ahead, Kelly.
Yeah, I actually, just to piggyback on what you just said, I would agree that I'm kind of the opinion that one of these two picks is going to be a defenseman, one's going to be a forward. That, you know, whichever way it goes, if we end up with a defenseman at seven, they're probably going to take a forward at 29, and vice versa. But I'm going to be super negative and say that the most likely outcome is our old friend Lawson Kraus, just because it would be the most Flyers thing to do, and it's always fun when they do that. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I would like to see them not, but I still think it just seems like the most likely thing to happen. But we will see on Friday what happens. Before we sign off for the night, is there anything else that you guys would like to talk about this evening?
I think we're good. Charlie, you have anything? We got a few minutes left on this stream, but we can cut it.
I'm feeling
pretty good. I think we got a lot of stuff covered tonight.
Yeah, I mean, thanks for listening, everybody. Sorry we weren't able to take any calls, but next time around, I'm sure we might be able to do this again next week, and then we can talk about the draft picks and definitely take some calls and see what kind of you know, what kind of reaction we have. Hopefully it's positive, because we got Provorov and somebody good at 29, and maybe even trade Grossman. God, that would be a great weekend.
Yeah, I think
that would,
hopefully we'll...
Yeah, that would be pretty great.
Hopefully we'll get an episode in, I don't know, maybe like Tuesday next week, between the draft and free agency starting on the 1st. And yeah, hopefully we've got lots of good news to talk about then. Well, I think the Flyers will... I just to sort of end on some optimism, even if the Flyers take Kraus, a guy who a lot of people out there listening and talking on the show aren't huge fans of. They're going to come away from this weekend with guys. I mean, he's a good prospect. And even that aside, like, the Flyers are going to come away from this weekend with many more good prospects than they did, than they came into it with. And, I mean, this organization is set up to have as good a prospect base as it has had in years, like, since Mike Richards and Jeff Carter were rookies. Like, this will easily have been the best base they've had since then, as long as they don't. I think it was Corey Prunman at ESPN who said a few weeks ago that as long as the Flyers don't take a rock and a stick with the 7th and 29th pick, their system will be in the best situation it's been in a long time. And, yeah, I think that's pretty much true. This team is in a position to do some good stuff this weekend. They have as many picks as any team in the draft. And I think no matter what happens, even if they take a guy who we maybe aren't expecting at first, they've done a pretty good job in the first round in recent years. So I think we'll leave this weekend with a lot to be excited about no matter what. Though I am hoping for Brett Brooks.
Absolutely. Even the worst case scenarios are pretty damn good. So it's kind of what a time to be alive. Super exciting.
Wow.
Indeed. Wow.
All right. I think that's going to wrap things up for this week. Thank you very much for listening. And big thanks to Kurt and Charlie for being a part of the show. It was awesome. And hopefully we will be back next week to talk about the draft and free agency.
Thanks, everyone.